Welcome to Behind the Panels, issue number 6, the podcast where if we don't like what we're reading, we just reboot it. I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
How are you, Richard?
Tired.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Work commitments. That's what we really do, isn't it?
It's been a big week.
It has been a big week. But we're here, and we are recording as per usual. And I've just got to tell you, Richard, we got a little bit of feedback on iTunes.
Nice.
I will endeavor to find this for us. As typical with this show, nothing is ever planned, and I didn't have it on screen at the time. We got a couple of feedbacks on iTunes, and I thought I would just share these with the listeners and remind people that if they want to leave some feedback on iTunes, it's much appreciated. And what we've got here is we've got two, actually. One comes from a very longtime fan of the Geek Action Network, Geek Betty, who says, Behind the Panels is a great addition to the Geek Action stable. David and Richard have a nice, easygoing rapport and an obvious love of the topic. Their encyclopedic knowledge of all things comics is impressive and just a wee bit spooky. really entertaining listening, and I love the book club approach. There you go. She gave us 4, 5 stars, too. And we also have one from sclark5150, who gave us 5 stars and says, this podcast made me download 3 comic reader apps plus so many comics. Love it!
That's what we're going to do. And in fact, I think if that is the case, we should start getting kickbacks from some of these companies.
Damn straight. So there you go. Thank you very much for leaving those reviews. And keep them coming, people. We love this. It helps us guide this mess that we're calling a show right now.
Consider our egos stroked.
Egos stroked. Fantastic. All right. I believe we have a little bit of...
What a scoop!
Comic news. We just love our little soundboard, don't we, Richard?
Yes, we do, don't we?
Now, Richard, you dug this story up and you got to tell me about it because I haven't had a chance to actually read it and you're going to tell me a story.
Well, a couple of weeks ago we spoke about Mark Millar coming to the defense of Frank Miller.
Yeah.
Over his comments on the Occupy Wall Street people, the whole Occupy movement.
Yep.
And, the very, very opposite ends of the political scale. Frank Miller is very much a right-wing person, and Mark Millar is very left-wing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coming from a completely different plane of existence is Alan Moore.
Right. Oh, and Alan Moore, that symbol of sanity.
He's decided he's going to weigh in and talk about Frank Miller's comments. Now, Alan Moore and Frank Miller haven't got along for a long time.
Right.
Alan Moore has often been very vocal about Frank Miller's work, and he actually points that out at the start of this article, which I grabbed from Bleeding Cool. And he starts off and says, well, Frank Miller is someone whose work I've barely looked at over the past 20 years. I thought the Sin City stuff was unreconstructed misogyny. 300 appeared to be wildly ahistoric, homophobic, and just completely misguided. I think there has probably been a rather unpleasant sensibility apparent in Frank Miller's work for quite a long time.
Wait, I have to stop you right there. He actually thought 300 was homophobic. I actually would have said it was homoerotic, quite frankly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, continue.
But he goes on to say that he hasn't had a lot to do with the comics industry. And
by the way, your Alan Moore sounds a lot like Michael Caine. Can I just say that?
No, Michael Caine will be up here somewhere.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He'd be talking, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. Master Bruce. I'll bring up the Battle of Bill, Master Bruce. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, man, we are tired, aren't we?
Anyway, he goes on to say that Alan Moore hasn't had a lot to do with the comics industry for a long time. He's still obviously writing comics, but he hasn't had a lot to do with the industry.
Well, he's a reclusive hermit.
He's a reclusive hermit with a beard.
Yes.
Who's a self-proclaimed witch as well.
Magician. I didn't know about the witch part, so yeah.
Sorry, magician, I mean, not witch. Sorry,
right.
He's a self-proclaimed magician. But then, you know, he said, he goes on to talk about comics and their spectrum of the political field. So, yes, I think it would be fair to say that me and Frank Miller have diametrically opposing views upon all sorts of things, certainly upon Occupy movement. He says, he goes on to say the Occupy movement is just ordinary people reclaiming rights, which should always have been theirs. I can't think of any reason why a population we should be expected to stand by and see a gross reduction in the living standards of ourselves and our kids, possibly for generations, when people who have got us into this have been rewarded for it. They've certainly not been punished in any way because they're too big to fail.
So in other words, the mountain man hippie has kind of raised his head out of his reclusive little cabin and basically said, shut up.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So he said it's completely justified howl of moral outrage, and it seems to be handled in a very intelligent, nonviolent way, which is probably another reason why Frank Miller would be less than pleased with it.
Yeah, and I love the fact that
emphasis there's... The emphasis here is, I'm sure if it had a bunch of young people, sociopathic vigilantes, and Batman makeup on their faces, he'd be more in favor of it.
I love the fact that the little cartoon strip they've actually put on this article is actually from the Electric Comics, and it actually has her kicking a guy so hard her foot is coming out his back.
Yeah. It's Daredevil.
Is that from Daredevil?
Daredevil, yeah.
Oh, it is Daredevil. Oh, she's kicking Daredevil. Oh, God. Well, he hasn't got a spleen anymore. Can I just say that? Oh, dear God.
Yeah, so, look, I mean, I thought it was interesting. But he also says we also need to overhaul the way we think about money. We need to overhaul the way we think about who's running the show. As an anarchist, I believe that... How should we give it to the people whose lives this is actually affecting, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, look, I mean, there's heaps that could be said on this, but I thought it's interesting that now Alan Moore's weighed into it. And as you said, I think you just said it best, the reclusive hippies raised his head, told everyone to shut up, and he's gone back to his cave.
But I just love the fact that this is a story that's been going on for, what, three weeks now. I think, in other words, we can really say...
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Or a story, as the case might be.
Or, and in the simpler words of Mr. Stanley, enough said.
Enough said, absolutely. It's look, how long can we... all right, he's been raked over the coals. He's been vindicated. He's been draked over the coals. He's been vindicated. So when does this end now?
Oh, I think Alan Moore spoke, and that's the end of it.
That's it. nobody wants to upset the big bug.
The final word, some would say. Now, the next story is a little bit from our wacky kind of area of things.
Oh, we don't have a theme for that. What can we do?
Wacky thing.
How about this one?
Time for a disappearing act, boys.
There you go.
Now, speaking of disappearing acts, an item disappeared from the open market, which was Nicolas Cage's Superman comic. He has a copy of Action Comics number one, or I should say he had a copy.
Had a copy,
of Action
yeah.
Comics number one. It sold on an online auction that ended on Wednesday for a cool $2.16 million.
That's a shitload of money for a comic book.
So that copy of Action Comics number one that you've got sitting up in your attic, David, you should probably sell that off.
I should probably sell that, shouldn't I? Don't give anybody any ideas. God, if I had if I had an Action Comics number one, I'd be at Sotheby's right now, let me tell you.
Absolutely. Well, it's the first comic to sell for more than $2 million, and a less well-preserved copy of it sold for $1.5 last year.
Jesus.
So... it is an incredible... I mean, look, I remember somebody saying, look, you know, comics, you know, they had the Overstreet price guides coming out and everything that tell you how much comics are worth objectively, but a comic is really only worth how much someone's willing to pay for it.
Absolutely. So it's like anything, isn't it?
Yeah, so you can actually have a guide price of, you know, a comic that's worth $40, but I mean, you might get $5 for it on eBay. So
interestingly enough, though, the end of this article, which is from... Where did you get this article from? This is from Hollywood Reporter. Actually says there are actually approximately 100 copies of this comic left. So Action Comics number one is actually really incredibly rare, which is one of the reasons why it's going for so much.
No, absolutely. And look, you know, it is the first appearance of the character that we will be talking about today.
In one of his many, many reboots. Anyway, we will talk a little bit more about that coming up. So, yeah, look, so my question is this. He had this comic stolen from him, right?
Right.
Now that it's been identified and sold, can he do anything about this now?
I don't know.
Because my understanding of the law is that if you are in possession of a stolen item, and even if you paid money for it, it's still a stolen item.
Yeah, that's right. It should be. That should be the case. That he should be able to.
The question is, can he prove it's his?
Well, that's the thing. You have to be able to prove it's his. I mean, I would imagine if it was one of those CGC type deals that was in the case with the code and everything like that, it should be quite easy to prove that it's his because it would have a serial number on it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, yeah, it is a matter of working at proving that it is his. But yeah, no, I mean, look, if it's certainly if it's the same as Australian law, then yes, if it's stolen property, even if you you thought you acquired it legally, it's still stolen property and it should be returned to its rightful owner.
And you're right; they should have at least the barcode. No, they didn't have barcodes back then, but they should have some sort of publishing number. Because it actually says here that he actually was paid out insurance for the stolen comic at the time, which means there had to be some
record of it.
Registry of the comic.
But the thing is, most of these comics that go for the high things, they're sold in. The picture that they've got in this article is from the CGC Universal Grade of comics. And you've seen those ones where they keep them in hard cases.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually have their own barcoded serial number on it. So that is a number that's trackable. So I would have thought something this valuable would have been in one of those cases.
You would think.
So
Nicolas Cage is kind of a whack job.
That's true. He's probably eating it. He's probably reading it while eating Cheetos. And
now my question is, considering that they've now decided that Nicolas Cage is a time-traveling vampire, do you think he actually bought it new?
I'm undoubtedly. I don't even doubt that story for a second.
Neither do I. I think it's a perfectly plausible explanation to the whole thing. All right. So we also have this other little bit of wacky news. Now, my son actually brought up the characters and the toys. Was it last week or the week before? But you found something else on Superhero Hype that I think is very interesting.
Yeah, well, we've all probably played at least one and loved the Lego games for any platform, really, from everything from Harry Potter to Indiana Jones and the classic Star Wars ones, of course. Mm. But we're speaking about there's the Batman Lego game as well.
The first Batman was really good.
It is quite fun, and yeah. It's a lot of fun. And what they've done is they've now got Lego Batman 2 coming out.
Yay!
And it's called Lego Batman 2 Superheroes. And the little bit of cover art that they've given to this, and it is a little bit of leaked cover. It's not leaked cover art. I think it was from like a trade magazine or something.
Right.
And it shows on the cover Lego Batman, but flying behind him is Lego Superman. And in the way in the background looks like what looks like Green Lantern and Wonder Woman and a few other people there. So it's I think there's a Metallo in the background there as well.
Can we hit speculation time now? Because I'm looking at this picture, and it actually says Batman 2 DC Superheroes. Now, what's interesting is that, as we pointed out last week, Lego is about to release the entire series of superhero minifigures.
That's right.
Marvel and DC.
Mm.
So I'm wondering if there's my little speculation machine in my head starts going off, and I start wondering, okay, it kind of explains the little superhero minifigures because they're probably a marketing tool for this game.
Mm-hmm.
And B, they're also doing Marvels, and the Marvels are actually 6 months later. Is that right?
Yes, you're thinking there's going to be a Marvel superheroes game.
There's going to be a Marvel superheroes game. There's probably going to be a Lego Spider-Man or something.
This is the greatest news in the history of news.
That's not news. It's complete speculation. But I look at it and go, something here clicks.
Look, they've all been. Little Lego bricks do click. Mm. That's how they stay together.
Absolutely. Then you got to get the little bastards apart with your teeth.
I've broken more teeth that way. But I've replaced them all with Lego bricks. So
there you go. So that's all right. But then when you close your mouth, you can't open your mouth again.
Yeah, look at me. Look, everyone, I think almost everybody universally loves the Lego games, and people who don't have no hearts. So, and they're demon people. I mean,
and who doesn't like little minifigures? They're the best part. So,
they're the best things ever.
Absolutely. And look, that little Superman is so cool.
He's got long hair, though. He's a hippie.
Well, you know, he's probably Alan Moore's Superman.
He'd have a giant beard.
Oh, no. That would explain. Oh, see, that's.
And instead of working at the Daily Planet, he'd be writing.
He'd be living in a shack out in the woods.
He'd be writing vaguely. He'd be living in a shack out in the woods, writing vaguely pornographic comics.
I mean, vaguely.
Okay. Overtly pornographic. He lost girls if no one's had a look at that. That is Frank Miller's.
Alan Moore.
Alan Moore's porno.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's kind of like thought, you know, I've always wanted to see Alice from Alice in Wonderland naked. let's write Lost Girls. You know?
Alan, there is something seriously wrong with that man.
He's a genius, but there is something wrong with it.
Yeah, no, yeah, no doubt. The genius part stands, but there's something wrong with that man.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a very fine line between genius and insane. I think he dances all over it. All right, back to Lego here for a minute. Oh my God, it's been a long week. Can I tell you that? All right, so I think we can safely assume that a Marvel game is coming. Now, my question is, if it's Batman and the DC superheroes, Lego's already had a Spider-Man franchise. Not in games, but in bricks. What the hell was that?
What the hell was what?
There was a tick sound.
I don't know.
That was so weird. I don't know where that came from. Anyway, that was such a strange
David, story. You're freaking out.
I'm hearing things, man. I'm hearing things. Oh, dear. It's that voice of God thing we were doing before. Anyway, it's coming back to haunt me.
They don't need to know about that, David.
You mean this voice?
That's the one.
That's the one. anyway, the question I have is, will they do Spider-Man and the Marvel superheroes? Or is there... No. Do you know what they'll do? Captain America.
The next big next Marvel movie that's coming, or there's two Marvel movies coming out next year, I guess, which is Spider-Man and the Avengers.
They'll release an Avengers game.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. They release an Avengers game. They can put any Marvel hero they want in there.
Sorted.
Okay, are you listening, Traveler's Tales / Lego? That's the game we want.
Do it.
I want to play a little Lego Black Widow.
We all do. There's so much about that sentence that's so right, and so much about it
so
that's so
wrong. In every way. I don't think there's anything right about that sentence at all. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to hell this episode. Really, I'm falling apart here in my seat. What can I tell you? Listen here. All right, so that's our news. we're moving on. I just want to know, aside from our reading list this week, what else have you read this week? Anything interesting?
Yeah, look, I started reading, following on from our last week's reading assignment, which was The Ultimates. I've started reading The Ultimates Volume 2 again.
Oh, what do you find? How are you finding it?
It's wonderful. I mean, like, it's taken the ball from the first one and just ran with it.
It does. The real turning point for that, though, the part where you basically sit there and go, "Yeah, baby," is I think it's issue 13. I think it's when the conclusion is coming. It's
right. I'm not quite up there yet.
I'm not telling you what it is because it's awesome.
I've literally only started rereading that in the last couple of days. But yeah, no, it's and I've sort of forgotten how it ends. I have read it. I did read it on its first run, but so I'm looking forward to reading that again. And I'm trying to catch up with some of the New 52, of course. Now that's I think we were talking about this a few days ago, David, but I think I've decided which ones I'm not going to continue with.
Yeah, I'm kind of reaching that point too. Speaking of the New 52, I've actually been reading some of the sub-books.
Yeah, no, I haven't got onto those yet. How are they?
Those are the ones I'm probably dropping. I think there's a reason why I didn't get to them first time around. I read Frankenstein, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I read the three issues that have been published. And really, no, not so much. It was kind of an interesting little sub-book in Flashpoint, and I don't know if it warrants being a book of its own, you know, at this point. It's kind of abstract. There is little parts of it where I sit there and go, yeah, you have potential here, but it's not for me. I finished reading the first three issues of Blue Beetle, and not so much, not doing anything.
I don't think I'll continue with Blue Beetle either. I don't think...
It's very disjointed. I actually find it really disjointed.
I'm glad you said that because I found the first one too, and I thought it was just me, but no.
No, it's very disjointed. Absolutely agree. I actually think I'm going to continue on with Captain Atom for a while because it's kind of interesting, especially when you get to book three. He actually teams up with the Flash, and it's really interesting because he's a complete outsider in the New 52. They've written him in such a way that nobody trusts him because they think he's a walking atomic bomb, basically, which he is. And everybody is just completely freaked out by the fact that this man could just be leaking radiation all over the place. And it kind of creates this interesting dynamic with the character because he just feels so alone. it's actually not bad. And it's not super gripping, but it's enough to keep me interested enough to read for a little while. And the one that I thought I wasn't going to continue on with at all because I was kind of not there with the first issue... But I've read up to issue 3 of The New Animal Man. And it's actually kind of caught my attention now because it's going into some really big themes.
Okay.
And apparently there's some crossovers coming with Swamp Thing and stuff.
Okay, so yeah, no, cause they're the two titles I've sort of neglected a bit, because I did find the first Animal Man of Tough Read, and it just wasn't grabbing me. I'm surprisingly liking the Superbooks, which will bring us into our pick of the week in a moment, because Superman was a character I never particularly liked, and I know this is going to be...
Wow, that's controversial.
Yeah, it was not controversial. Now, let me qualify that. I like reading good Superman books because there is something iconic about the character. When they get it right, I actually think that's magic, because it is the best that comics have to offer. It's everything that we want. It's a superpowered cape. Superman is the ideal that we all want to aspire to. When it's that big, you know, American pie, baseball, all that sort of stuff, Disneyland,
those things that
America loves about itself, or thinks that it loves about itself, all in one person. And that's what I love it. Way more than Captain America.
Captain America is an acquired taste.
Superman, when they get him right, I think is still the best character in comics. However, a lot of the stuff I've always found difficult to swallow because I prefer the characters that are flawed human beings, I think, ultimately. And there's a reason why I like Green Arrow so much, for the same reasons that I like Batman and for the same reasons that I like characters that are similar to that. Because they are humans who have, you know, they're self-made men, I guess.
Yeah, and if you go into the Marvel Universe, you've got Spider-Man, who's definitely flawed.
And as I would say, even though Spider-Man's got superpowers, he is just a kid trying to deal with stuff.
Yeah, and you've got Daredevil, who is blind, you know what I mean? Mm. And he's dealing with the fact that he has effectively a handicap that he's overcome with his powers, and he deals with complete Catholic guilt constantly, so he's broken on the inside. And that makes him a very interesting character, because he's not perfect. You know?
And the problem I always found with Superman books, until I read some really good ones, and now I do actually quite like reading the character, because you do get a certain buzz out of reading a Superman book.
Yeah.
The thing, when they get it wrong, it's kind of like they have to do one thing. Superman is a super powerful guy who can, you know, lift buildings, and he can fly into space, and he can, you know, shoot hot beams out of his eyes, and he can, you know, he's invulnerable to most projectiles
Let's put it this way. It's hard to relate to a god.
It's hard to relate to a god, and also it's hard to come up with a reasonable threat to him without making it bigger and bigger and bigger each week.
Which is actually one of the things that's interesting, rolling this back to the New 52. If you read the New 52, this is for the listeners, not you, because you read it, but in the New 52, at the end of select issues, they have like notes from the artists and the writers, and they talk about why they went the direction they went with the new characters. There is actually one all about Action Comics, and there's one all about the new Superman, and they talk about the fact that it was actually refreshing and fun to actually make him vulnerable.
Yeah.
To make him not super strong, to make him actually be able to get hurt.
And this is perhaps why I'm enjoying this run of Superman more than any other Superman I've read before.
Yeah, I think so. That's one of the things they always did in the film versions and TV versions, like with Smallville and stuff like that. They always said, you couldn't portray Superman as he's portrayed in the comic books on screen because it's ludicrous.
You have to do the other thing. If you don't make bigger and bigger and bigger villains, you have to constantly put Lois and Jimmy and all of his friends in danger, and that becomes ridiculous too.
Absolutely. So in lieu of creating super-duper super-villains, because they don't want to just keep creating bigger and bigger villains, you've got to actually bring his brawn down. You've got to actually make him be able to get hurt. You've got to make him so that he can't just lift a building off the ground with one hand. You know what I mean? Mm. He's got to struggle a little bit, because if he doesn't struggle a little bit, then we can't relate to him at all. I agree with you. I think the New 52 is handling Superman incredibly well. And I'm really enjoying them all. The only one out of the super books that I think I'm kind of still a bit iffy on, I'm reading it because there is a connection to Teen Titans, but that's Superboy.
Agreed.
I think Superboy is a flawed comic at this point, but I'm curious to see his inclusion in Teen Titans. Next issue, actually, apparently he's joining Teen Titans. So it'll be interesting to see that inclusion. Let's see how they actually do that.
Although I do, like, on the very first page of the first issue of New 52 Superboy, it's like, they call me Superboy. I have no idea why. Which probably sums it up nicely.
Yeah, and there, I mean, there's some interesting... I actually find with Superboy comic book, some of the sub-characters are much more interesting than him himself.
Yeah. And I think that's good. And I think it's about some of the characters that I've not really enjoyed a lot in the past. Like The Flash, he's in all the major super in all the major DC events. But never. But I've always found him interesting when he does come in, because he's kind of got this ready-made family of characters around him that I think makes him such an interesting character.
Yeah.
And I do actually find his story interesting because of the family around it, whereas other people... you know, when they send Batman too far off into the Dark Knight kind of end of things, where he's just the solo guy who's, you know, working by himself, I find that harder to relate to because despite the fact that I am an angry loner who spends my knife on...
Although, interesting you say that, because the one Batman book where he's actually partnered up with somebody is the weakest one.
No, I agree with you there. Batman and Robin. Not so much a partner, but when he's got... kind of people to go back to, He's got this network, and I think that's where it works best. But don't want to spend too long on this. But that, suffice it to say that there will be a few that I won't be reading after this week.
I think so. I think we're ready to cut the 52 down by at least 10.
So. Yeah, look, I mean, normally until the New 52 came out, and I have picked up a lot. This is exactly what they did. It. I picked up a lot more titles than I normally would have.
Yeah.
But normally I keep it to a good core 6 or 7 titles from DC. I don't read huge amounts of.
No, I think DC's done a wonderful job making us all fascinated by this enormous number of comic books.
But I hate to say it, but Green Arrow is not one of my essential books at the moment.
And that's very strange.
That's very strange for me. I would go and pick up, I think, look, you know, if I had to quickly name 5 essential books, I would probably quickly name Justice League.
Yes.
I would name Action Comics.
Yes.
And I would name Aquaman.
Yes. I was about to say, surprising as it may sound, Aquaman is actually on my most desired list at the moment when it comes to the new month's worth of comics.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And it's just a really well-written book. Of the Bat titles, I would probably name...
Detective Comics?
Probably Detective Comics, because it is the darkest of the lot, but it kind of carries on what I liked about the...
Actually, there's 3. It's Detective Comics, it's Batman, and it's Batman Dark Knight.
Yeah, I don't like Batman Dark Knight, I don't think, at the moment. So it'd be a toss-up between Batman and Detective Comics for me.
Okay, because I'm actually quite enjoying Dark Knight. I'm just consulting my son, the master of all things 52 at the moment. Dark Knight is the one with the Joker growth drugs and stuff, isn't it? With the big Harvey Dent at the end. Yeah, he's pointing. Yeah, that's the one with this. There's a strange drug going through Arkham, which turning them into big hulking type monsters.
That's right. Yeah,
and it's got some interesting. We actually met the character who's basically selling that drug in the last episode, in the last issue, and she's a character called the Silver Rabbit or something like that. And she's basically saying, "You never catch the rabbit. You never catch the white rabbit. You never catch the white rabbit."
Right. And well, I think it's my problem that I'm having trouble keeping. Track of all the different Batman books because they are very similar in tone sometimes. I'd round up my 5 by saying something completely off the wall like Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Love Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Which I expected to be a completely stupid book, but it's got such a great sense of humor.
I'm actually finding that some of my favorite books in the New 52 at the moment are actually some of the sub-Batman books. I really like Teen Titans. I really like Red Hood and the Outlaws.
I've always liked the Teen Titans, so yeah, I'm definitely sold on that.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the new structure of the Teen Titans, how it's all working out. I really like Batgirl and Catwoman.
Yeah, I know. I have to agree with you there. Batgirl and Catwoman, not so much Batgirl for me, but definitely Catwoman is proving to be a hot, quite literally, book.
Yeah, well, in both two ways, yeah. Yeah. And in the Superman books, I'm really enjoying Supergirl.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It surprised me as well because there's been so many incarnations of her over the years. This is a good one.
Yeah, it is. It's a very good one. So, and the last issue, the issue number 3, is actually really hot. It's a really good issue.
Okay, I haven't caught up with the 3rd one yet. So I'll
read that one. It ends on a cliffhanger, of course, but it's a really good issue.
Right, we should move swiftly along, David.
We should, and I believe we've got this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's
It's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is.
And the pick of the week this week is, as we've already alluded to, Superman's Secret Origins.
Absolutely. This is a book that came out, I think it's 2009, is it?
I think so. I'm just bringing up the details now, but I'm pretty sure you're right. The bit of background to this is that, well, I guess Superman has been rebooted a number of times.
Well, yeah, okay. So this is one of those reboots where you sit there and go, this is an origin story reboot of a book that I don't actually think it needed to be done. Let's get that out in the air right now.
But they did this for a couple of different reasons, and the official reasons are this. Going even further back to the 1986, mm-hmm. John Byrne famously rebooted Superman in a book called Man of Steel.
Right.
And to contextualize that, you'd had the Superman movie in the late 70s and its sequels coming out. Superman was a hot property again.
Yep.
And they wanted accessibility for the comics. And at the time, they were rebooting a lot of comics, and major ones got a brand new set of origin stories coming out of that, and Superman was absolutely one of them. Hmm. And now Man of Steel, as a result of that, people referred to new origin stories as being burned, because John Byrne had actually taken the elements of the original and given it a modern twist.
Right.
But they've redone that a few times over the year. And the last official time that they did this before the one we're talking about today was Birthright. And that was done in 2003 and 2004.
Now, I actually read that this week as well.
I've also read that one. And yeah. That's actually one of my favorite reboots.
Yeah, and I have to say, I actually really enjoyed Birthright. And it's really interesting because I didn't mind Secret Origin when I read it. And I actually thought, it's kind of lightweight. And to talk about Secret Origin in particular, I actually think the first two issues are a write-off.
Yes.
It's what is it, a six-issue miniseries, and you can actually do away with the first two issues because
Absolutely. They
are a rough, almost scant version of the Superboy story,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't go into any detail or enough detail. And so really you're kind of going through going, can we just get onto Superman? And it's like, and when he finally makes his appearance in Metropolis in issue 3, we go, thank God, now at least we can at least start the story. Because
And it's the complete opposite to Birthright, where you do spend a fair chunk of it waiting for him to become Superman.
Absolutely.
But the story is so compelling in Birthright that you don't really mind.
Yeah, because you're also at the same time finding out about Lex and about a lot of other things that are going on in Birthright, which make it a really compelling, interesting story.
That's right.
And I
suspect there'll be elements of Birthright in the new Man of Steel film.
Yeah, I think there will be. I think we've actually got, what is it, 4 comic books or something like that we think may be source materials for Snyder's new film. I don't think there's going to be any one film or any one source. I think he's borrowed heavily from everything. We'll put it this way. It's a story by David Goyer, and this is a David Goyer motif.
Mm.
Goyer will have borrowed from everything that worked. And I'm not saying Goyer is a bad writer. He's one of the people who's actually managed to bring a lot of comic books to life successfully. And I think it's because he knows how to pick and choose little bits of this and little bits of that and actually make it into something that works,
No, I absolutely agree with you. But with the book we're looking at this week, which is Superman Secret Origins, which, mm-hmm. as you said, already is a 6-issue miniseries, it came out after DC's last big crisis. About two crises ago.
Oh, man, you're back on this crisis thing again. We did this last week.
Yeah, I know. This came out after Infinite Crisis, put it that way. So for those of you who are keeping score, that was the crisis around 2006.
That was the crisis caused by the previous crisis, which was a side effect of the crisis before that.
Pretty much, yeah. I think we need to draw a Venn diagram or something.
I think so.
Put it up on the side at the end.
I can't keep up with the DC crises. I'm sorry.
Anyway, what they realized after that...
Any comic book series that has this many crises needs good counseling, all right?
Absolutely. Lie down on the couch.
Absolutely. All right, sorry, I keep interrupting.
Basically what they realized after that was that Superman didn't have an official post-crisis origin story. So that's where this book comes in. And so they got Jeff Johns, who has pretty much written every book for the last 10 years, I think.
He seems to be like the man to go to at the moment.
Absolutely, and he's doing good stuff too. It's mostly gold. So it was him, and in the artist he got on this was Gary Frank, who'd just been doing they've both just done stories called Superman and the Legion of Superheroes,
right,
and Brainiac. So what this is meant to be is the definitive origin story of modern Superman, which they're now kind of saying that Birthright and before that they were saying Birthright and Man of Steel were the definitive origin stories. Now this is, look, honestly, they're all more or less the same story.
Yeah, they are, and the thing is, now it's a new 52, it's all changed anyway, so it
exactly
kind of
right.
Blew
so
it out of the water.
We will expect a new origin story of
completely new.
Absolutely, and it's a shame because they're all such great stories. But I think that's the wonderful thing about a character like Superman, and this is the one thing I will give an iconic character like that props for, is that you can reinterpret him as you would with any great hero of legend over the decades, eventually over the centuries. He will disappear into the popular mythology only to be reinvented and reborn countless times. That's the beautiful thing about these characters, and we've seen it with the Batman films, and we'll see it again.
Yeah,
there'll be another version of Batman once Nolan's finished his story.
And you know, so no matter how many times they reboot it, there's core elements that always stay in place because they're the iconic things, you know.
And that's kind of where we start with Superman's Secret Origins, because it does very much go back to the roots, and when it, particularly in the wake of something like Superman Birthright, it is a very conservative retelling.
Yeah.
Of the Superman origin story, because we start the very first issue in the beautiful artwork by Gary Frank.
Yep.
Starts with it's got the cover of that issue is Ma and Pa Kent standing in front of the farmhouse with a very young looking Christopher Reeve. Clark Kent.
Yeah, no, let's go there for a second. back up. Let's go there for a second, because the one thing that the artist did, Gary Frank did, and quite successfully, I must say, I'm just not sure if it was actually necessary, but he actually managed to make Superman, even as a young man and all the way through to, you know, being full-fledged Superman, he actually drew him to look exactly like Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, and the thing is, they actually went to pains to say that, you know, this isn't Birthright and this isn't Man of Steel and this isn't Superman the movie. Mm. This is their own thing. But they've, as you said, they've clearly pulled elements from each of those things, and Christopher Reeve is very much an element of the look of the comic anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
And perhaps that's it's undoubtedly deliberate, but
there's a lot of people who say that the spirit of Superman now really is Christopher Reeve, and he is the one that everybody compares. I mean, when Brandon Routh took the cape, everybody said, "Oh, he looks like a young Christopher Reeve." And you know,
and I think, you know, absolutely, and I think that's exactly it. I think we do identify with him so much because that movie is so iconically Superman, and for most people, that and the theme and Christopher Reeve's look are what we think of first when we think of Superman.
Yeah.
And we're yet to have someone replace that. You know, Dean Cain certainly didn't do it for us. Tom Welling certainly didn't do it for us.
No, but did you notice that there's a scene, speaking of Tom Welling, there's a scene in the first issue of Secret Origins where there's actually a tornado in Smallville, which involves Lana. There's actually a scene just like that in Smallville where he ends up saving Lana and basically flying through the tornado, and he's not really flying, but he's holding his own against this tornado and actually saves her. And you sit there and go, yeah, that was about the right time.
undoubtedly, the success of Smallville is, it partly explains why they wanted to go back and look at the story again.
Yeah.
But it's a good story. And really, it starts with Superman as a young, well, Clark, Kal-El, let's just call him, on Earth, discovering for the first time that he is of extraterrestrial origin.
Yep.
And the way they do that's really good, because they do exactly what we were talking about is wrong with some superhero comics before. They do the opposite of that, and actually give him a frailty, give him a weakness that he can't get close to people because he's afraid of hurting them.
Yep.
And he doesn't know why.
Yeah, well, because they're approaching that whole concept like Smallville before, which is that he's reaching puberty. And
yeah.
So his powers are manifesting. And like when there's an early panel where he goes to kiss Lana and his eyes start to glow, which is obviously, you know, very metaphorical, and you sit there and go, oh, I see where they're going with this.
Yeah.
And so you've got all these little moments throughout that first page. And I said at the beginning, the first two issues are a write-off because really we just want to get onto the Superman stuff. I guess really it's the second issue that I hated a lot, and I just didn't really need it in any way, shape, or form. And it almost felt like, and it's interesting you actually brought up the fact that the team had been working on Legion of Superheroes, because it's almost like they couldn't let go.
No, and I didn't like that issue particularly, but there's one thing I'll mention in issue one before we move on.
Sure.
There's a panel where they say where it's basically he's triggered his Kryptonian capsule, and his Jor-El and his mother are speaking to him through, you know, technology.
Yep.
And there's a little panel goes past, a great many tragedies have befallen our planet before our final fate. And if you look on that, one of the tragedies, they've got a picture there of Doomsday.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I'm just having a look. Where are we?
That's we're looking at page 29, I guess.
Oh, 29. Sorry, I'm way back. Hold on a second. 29. Oh, here we are. Doomsday. Oh, yes. Never occurred.
Interesting that they inserted that into the origin story there.
That actually never occurred to me.
No, that it jumped out at me, really, because I thought, wow, is that – and I almost turned the page and thought, no, wait a minute, that's Doomsday.
Is that also kind of or almost a little bit of a throw to Smallville as well? Because in Smallville, they established that Doomsday was actually Kryptonian.
That's right.
So
yeah, so maybe it is.
Maybe it's another throwback to Smallville again, to trying to somehow tie these things together. Kicking and screaming, yes. Drag these things together.
I'll have to look that one up because I've only just remembered that now. But he basically, the long shot of issue one is that, as you said, his powers are manifesting. He meets a young Lex Luthor, who is a misunderstood genius who feels as though he's trapped in a small town full of backwards hicks, and he's the only genius there. And as you've already alluded to, he manages to save Lana in a twister.
Yep.
He sort of gets the first taste of what it's like to use his powers to save people. And then there's a great moment at the very end of that issue, though, where
probably the best moment of the comic book for me.
Comic, and it's like Martha Kent's made him a costume from the his Kryptonian swaddling. He steps out for the first time. We see him in the Superman costume, except he's quite young, and he says...
I love the fact that his father says,
It's a bit tight, isn't it, Martha? Martha says, it's adorable. And he says, you better take a nice long look, because this is the last time I ever wear this. And it's perfect, and it is kind of what a teenage boy would say if he was had to wear.
Exactly. I love the fact that this same costume that's made for him actually fits him years later when he's all filled out.
Well, it's Kryptonian in origin.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, let's glance over issue two real quick, because
let's just say it introduces, for no apparent reason,
The
Legion of Superheroes from the future. They come back and say, look, you're a big deal in the future. This is what you got looking forward to. You now go back and forget about us. which they promptly do for the next four issues.
They never mention them again.
No. And it was weird. As you said, it's probably the fact that they'd fallen in love with the Legion of Superheroes and they couldn't quite let it go. It makes no sense, and they've retconned them into Superman's origin story for some reason. I know there were a lot of, as you said, it's tying a lot of those disparate elements together. In the old Superboy books, it was Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes.
I was about to say, I remember it's not completely retconned, because they actually had the Superboy and the Legion going back into the 70s.
But that was pre-crisis. So
yeah, it was
Even earlier than the 70s. This is all pre-crisis stuff where they were involved in it. So it's kind of weird that in this post-crisis book they've included him in there. I haven't kept up with the Superman story that long.
It's
so
kind of almost like they went, oh yeah, the Legion was part of him being Superboy. We better do a quick one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let's just throw that in there real quick and then we can move on. You know what I mean? I just felt it was unnecessary.
Exactly right. But for me, the story really begins first page, issue 3,
yep,
which is Clark Kent looking up. It first arrived in Metropolis, looking up into the sky.
And it's it quite literally is, at this point, Christopher Reeve.
Oh, it is. It's very much. And they've captured it perfectly. And I think the whole thing about that they've touched on later things about, you know, watch the disguise, Clark Kent or Superman, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah,
is really prominent in this series here, and he sort of comes in as a complete buffoon. And it, as you said, it is very much those early scenes from the first Richard Donner Superman movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is great.
About, it would be this
easy, miss. I've got you.
You've got me. Who's got you?
That one.
Exactly right. And it sort of moves out. And when they introduce Lois Lane as well, it's not wrong if it's the truth is one of her first big lines when she gets her first shot there. And then the next page is just full of dialogue between her and oh God, help me out here. What's his name? Perry White.
Yeah.
And if you read it really quickly, you can imagine it's meant to be like a 1930s, 1940s screwball thing.
Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Much the way. Now, they've obviously not modeled her on Margot Kidder.
No, or anybody in Smallville. They've actually come up with her all by themselves.
Absolutely. But and she's quite the looker.
She is, although I like the fact that she's attractive. She's wearing, you know, the tight pencil skirt and all this sort of stuff. But they've kind of given her lank hair, which kind of says that she doesn't she doesn't groom as well as she should because she's just about work.
Yep, absolutely.
You know? And I like that about her. I really like the fact that they've kind of drawn her as a working girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I like about this too, there's an instant attraction between Lois and Clark.
Yes.
But they don't acknowledge that she's off into work immediately. But and the way she's met Clark 5 minutes before and then tries to dupe him into sneaking into.
And I love the way they portray her desk as well.
Yeah.
he actually says something about it too. He says, it's in here. She's looking for a ticket. She goes, it's in here somewhere. And he goes, along with everything else you own.
Yeah. It's like, hold this, Clark. And it's like a bra and a wig.
Yeah. You know? The relationship between Clark and Lois is really classic Superman. It's fantastic. Mm. And they've captured that incredibly well. And once again, the artwork is just stunning. I mean, it's really crisp. It's beautiful.
Oh, it is. It's some of the best. And as I said, this is the sort of Superman book from issue 3 onwards that I like to read because it is iconic stuff. And it is that clip you played before, Who's Got You, you know, yeah. You know, et cetera, is kind of where this story exactly sits. It sits in there because it's at the end of issue 3. It's basically that scene. It's him catching her for the first time when she's falling.
Yep.
And there's a great hero shot. Really iconic stuff on page 26. I was looking at it now.
Yeah, I was just looking at page 26. The old shirt being ripped open.
Ripped open. And as you say, that artwork is beautiful. That is just, in and of itself, is a classic bit of wallpaper.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's,
That is Superman. Right.
Absolutely.
There,
it's 100% Superman.
Yeah.
And then he takes off, and then there's the scene where he's caught her. Now, after this book, it gets a little odd, I think. It's still a good story.
Well, it's funny because it's actually a very similar material covered in Birthright after this point, which is Lex has a piece of meteor. Lex doesn't trust Superman, doesn't like him, wants to prove him wrong, you know, wants to prove that he's vulnerable, wants to be the hero. And that's fine. And I think there's actually a panel, the panel that I really like, I'm confusing my two books now, but is it the panel I really like? Yes. At the end of the last issue, which is kind of the arc of Lex, right? And there's an ongoing thing that happens through these three issues, which is Lex comes out every morning and selects a person to be a hero to, right? Mm. And the whole city basically gathers outside his walls. And Lex just wants to be loved, basically. It's just
I think that's a really interesting aspect of his character.
Yeah, it is. And he comes out and goes, good morning, Metropolis. And he selects a person at random, supposedly, and turns their life around, saves a person. And there's that panel in the last page, or near the last page, it's like page 39, where he steps out and they go, oh, God, Mr. Luthor is not going to like this. And he goes out and goes, good morning, Metropolis, and everyone's gone.
Mm.
You know, and you just, and the look on Lex's face at that point, you just sit there and go, yeah, that's the full arc of his story. And that's really, forget everything that happens in the middle. It's that first panel where he comes out and says, "Good morning, Metropolis," and selects a person, and that last panel where there's nobody there. That's the story that goes over three issues. There's action stuff that happens in there, but that's really what it's about. And it's about that moment where you sit there and go, this is what's turning Lex.
I thought it was really interesting that Lex never remembers that he knew Clark.
Well, and they cover that in Birthright.
But they don't cover it here.
They actually talk about the fact that he reinvented his past and chose to forget everything from Smallville.
And I think that's true. I mean, I think that's a fairly good explanation, because he is not the same Lex Luthor that was in Smallville.
No, absolutely not.
He's not the angry young god. He's a self-fashioned god. He's not the angry young boy. He's a self-fashioned god by the time he gets there. So when he meets an actual god...
Yeah, he's outclassed, and it pisses him off. And I think if they had ever portrayed Lex like this in the films, it would have actually made for a very interesting film character as well, because you could actually go into some really deep territory. But what they've tended to do with Lex Luthor on screen is make him funny. Mm. And I don't think Lex should be funny. He's tragic. He's a villain. He's a villain. He's evil, but he's also quite tragic. He's broken.
You know, it's interesting. I saw... This is just getting off the point for a second. I saw last night here in Sydney, Kevin Spacey's doing a performance of Richard III.
Right.
Now Kevin Spacey, of course, is the last person to have played Lex Luthor on the big screen anyway.
That was in the weird Stalker Superman movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. it had a lot of faults. Superman Returns. I did like elements of it, but it did have its flaws. But the Lex Luthor in that, he kind of did a bit of a cat stroking Lex Luthor, but he also did. There was a lot of comedy in there as well. The portrayal that he did of Richard III.
Yeah.
It was very over the top. Now there's a famous line in Richard III. If I cannot prove to be a lover, I shall prove to be a villain. He is the villain. He's a conniving villain throughout most of it. When the other characters are off screen, he's kind of talking to the audience, telling them all his schemes and plans and things he's going to do. But then he's hamming it. Kevin Spacey, being Kevin Spacey, was hamming it up terribly.
Hmm.
Which is kind of what is the problem that they do with Lex Luthor, but at the same time, this very Shakespearean villain is a flawed villain, and he's a twisted villain,
yeah.
And he was broken a long time ago, and now all he has is his hatred, which is very much kind of where we get to by the end of Superman Origins.
I can see the parallel there, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's a classic Shakespearean villain arc, and at the same time you've got the very classic hero arc in Superman.
Hmm.
So you've got the kind of Joseph Campbell hero's journey kind of thing, and the villain's arc at the same time. It's a very classic story, Superman or Secret Origins.
All right. So do you know what I think the problem with Secret Origins is? And we've said a few things here and there, but specifically, I think my problem with Secret Origins is it's not long enough. I think one of my problems with it is it's telling such a big story, and there is so much to do between Superman and Lex and building the relationship with Lois and all that sort of stuff. I think Birthright had the right idea. Birthright was like, 13 issues or something like that?
It was 12 issues,
that's right. And it gave itself time to grow. And let's face it, one of the big factors, and this happens in Superman all the time, and Birthright is the first one I've ever read where they've actually allowed it to happen, which is if a flying man in a blue costume who turned out to be maybe an alien showed up on the planet, nobody would trust him.
No,
they would go, what the hell is that? And that's exactly what they do in Birthright. And there's that whole thing about the media spinning it and basically talking about how the fact that you can't trust him and he's evil, and it's about Superman trying to find his place and trying to prove to people that he's not. And yet, because Lex controls the media, basically, they're all loving him, and yet he is so obviously the bad guy.
Every time Superman appears in this, it's like kind of like, don't hurt me.
Yeah, exactly.
People are like, don't hurt me. And he goes, just stand back. And they go, of course we'll stand back. We'll do anything you tell us. Just don't hurt us. He goes, no, I just don't want you to get hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
And he goes, no, please don't hurt us. And he goes, no, really, I'm trying to protect you. It's like,
and I just felt the Secret Origin just kind of glossed over a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, we just got to get to the end. And I think that's its biggest problem, is the fact that it just didn't give itself enough scope. And it would have been nice to have seen it give itself a little bit more scope, because it's beautifully drawn and the dialogue is is pacey, and it moves along at a great pace. And I'd just like to have seen it slow down and just take a breath and say, no, what would be the repercussions of this? You know, and I think that's the biggest thing. And if you are going to do a Superboy prologue to it, you've got to give that more time. Otherwise, it just feels tacked on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, don't make him Superboy. Show Clark as a young man, and that's all fine, and show him in Smallville, and then have him get the costume to go to Metropolis.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I mean, he becomes Superman when he puts the costume on, and even Smallville recognized that, as you said. It's it wasn't until, you know, the end of – until season 10 that he put on the costume. You know, it is the iconic thing because the costume is Superman, as you said. I've always found the Superboy thing quite ridiculous.
Well, and Superboy was a later construct. It's like they wanted to sell more books. They wanted to get a younger audience. Of course, they created Superboy. They created Krypto. They created Supergirl. I mean, after Superman was a hit, they just started creating or retrofitting all of this early stuff.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the things I really loved about the 1979 origin story on film was that Donner didn't touch on that. He basically, the moment... The true beginning of that film is actually 45 minutes into the film, and it's when you have that shot in the Fortress of Solitude. He's in costume, the music swells, and he flies at camera. And you go,
"It is.
That's it," you know?
It's the amazing thing. It's the thing I've always loved about that film is that you sit there, even now, and you watch it. And I think it was the first time I'd watched it in about 10 years when the DVD first came out. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and watched it, and I was 45, 50 minutes into the movie, and I thought, my God, I've been watching this for 3/4 of an hour. I thought I'd been watching it for 10 minutes because that opening story is just so captivating.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you don't notice that you haven't even had Superman on the screen yet.
And that's the thing. Donner's Superman is amazing because here's a film that, you know, the effects have horribly dated. In fact, some of the effects were actually a bit dated when they came out. You know what I mean? Mm. And you know, some of the rear screen. But it's such a good film. And it really is tight, and it just encapsulated Superman in every way that you could possibly do it on screen. That's never been done since. You know, with all the sequels, they've never been able to capture that essence of Superman. And I think as you're saying, that first book, and maybe even the second book of this, where he appears in Metropolis, so we're talking about books 3 and 4, we suddenly have Superman. And there's a true Superman feeling in there. But at other times, you kind of sit there and go, it's Lex's story, but he's not given enough to do. And should it be Lex's story or should it be Superman's story? And I think overall, I think that if, you know, we're assessing these books, I think if you're going to go to an origin story, I think Birthright's the way to go.
Mm.
You know, and I think if you want to invest some time in an origin story, I think Birthright really captured the right balance a lot better than this did. This has got great moments, don't get me wrong. And there's some really wonderful moments in this.
No, I agree with you, and I think that's the thing. It's as I said, it's an iconic version of it. It's full of great moments, but ultimately, as a 6-issue arc, it's inherently flawed because it didn't know quite what direction it was going at first, and when it did finally find its feet, we didn't spend enough time there. So,
I just thought of something. I know what this book feels like now. It's 6 issues. It should feel like a complete series. But it feels like a pilot television show.
Yeah.
It feels like, we're going to do more.
Yeah, perhaps that was the case.
Yeah, and I think that was very much the case. I think they went, this is the start of a new Superman. And I don't know, did they actually continue on in this same style and actually do a full book on this?
I'm not entirely sure, actually. I think...
Because Johns did do a Man of Steel for a while. Was that followed? That was before this, though, wasn't it?
That's... possibly before this. You know, I have to look that up because I'm not quite sure.
Because John's talked about his run on Man of Steel on Inked, that TV show.
That's right.
So he was on that. But I don't know whether his run was after this or before this.
I'll have to look that up.
That'll be very interesting to know. Mm. So, but yeah, look, my overall feeling, I don't know. What's your overall feeling of this book?
Oh, look, I enjoyed it, but I don't think it's essential reading.
Fair enough. Fair enough. No, I can, and one day we will have to do Birthright in detail because I think it is a good book.
No, I think you know, and I'm going to propose this now. In the lead up to Man of Steel next year, I think we should look at this. And there's a couple of ones that you've suggested before, absolutely. So we should look at this We've already looked at this one. We should look at Birthright and the one that you've spoken about, Earth One.
Earth One. I think we should do Earth One at some point. Earth One will be a good one because it's actually only one issue. It's a graphic novel.
It's a long issue, though.
Well, it's a graphic novel. It's got some length to it, yeah, but it's only one. So, and that's out there and available. So we might do that next year. You're right. I think with our speculation building, we should have trailers by then as well.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. We should start to see a teaser, I would imagine, at either by the end of this year or early next year.
I would hope so. They've been shooting for a while. They've got to have material now.
Mm.
Anyway, we'll see how we go. All right, Richard, what are we doing next week?
I think next week we're going to get away from capes for a while.
Okay.
And we're going to look at something else that's been quite popular due to its television adaptation, which is The Walking Dead.
Oh, I love The Walking Dead. All right, Walking Dead is a lot of issues. What are we going to do?
I think what we'll do is we'll cap it off where they ended the first collection when they put them out in trades, which was issues 1 through 8.
Cool. All right. So I've it's been a long time since I read issues 1 to 8, so I will go back and reread those.
Well, for you, it'll be interesting because for you, it's going back and rereading them in light of the television series. I have done neither. So for me, this is exactly what this show is about. It's finding about finally discovery. Reading those things that I've always wanted to read.
Absolutely. It's discovery. I'm actually I'm in the middle of Walking Dead season 2 at the moment, the series on TV. I'm 2 episodes behind at the moment, so I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, obviously, because I'm not up to date. But my God, it's dull.
So season 2, this is Frank Darabont's left the show at this stage?
Yeah, he's gone by now. He's still listed in the opening credits, but I think he was actually fired after the production wrapped on, I think, the second episode. So, I think he's off the series by now. But to tell you the truth, I don't know how much work he was actually doing on it because you don't see it. You can't really notice him missing because the series was already dull.
Hasn't really... anything Frank Darabont's been involved in is going to be long.
I'm not talking about long. I can handle long. I'm talking about dull. All right. I mean, put it this way. I'll give you an example. In the series, a little girl has gone missing. This is actually in the comic as well. Sophia goes missing. It's not in the first 8 issues, I don't believe, so don't worry. But she goes missing in this one sequence. And so they have to do like a bit of a manhunt to find Sophia. And in doing all of that, they find the house in the woods, which is, of course, this doctor. And there's a subplot to all that. And then they move on. Right, and that's the thing about The Walking Dead. They keep moving on, and they find new places to go to, and there's always these new story arcs. Well, I've watched 4, I believe, episodes of season 2. Sophia went missing in the first episode, and we're still searching for her.
Right.
And you sit there and go, either leave her to die or find her or move on. Do something. I'm bored. How long can we drag out this search? And this has been my problem with this TV series for some time. And people go, why are you talking about TV series? Well, quite frankly, I mean, it's based on a comic book. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And the comic book is so far superior to this television show in almost every way.
Is the book still running?
Yeah. Actually, so. I every month, it's one of my religious things that I have to do every month.
I've got a lot of catching up to do.
Religiously. I think they're actually up to issue, I'll tell you, I recently just read them. Oh, no, I've recently just got hold of the latest issue. I haven't read it yet, though. And it's issue, let me see here, issue 91.
Okay. So I've got a lot of catching up to do.
You're a little bit behind.
That's all right.
What I actually found with Walking
Dead.
I've
heard that before.
What I found with Walking Dead when I first started reading it was it actually took me several tries to start. It was like one of those, it's like a car with a bad starter motor, you know, where it just doesn't want to kick over. And I actually reread the first half of the first book about 4 times and couldn't quite get there. And then one night I sat down and I read the whole issue, which made me want to read the second issue, which made me want to read the third issue. And I think I read like 20 issues in a sitting. And I went, wow, this is really, it's really fast read. And yeah. I actually polished off and caught up to date, which at the time I think was like 70 issues or something like that, in literally a few days. It was just powered through it. So it'd be good to go back and reread it because I actually read it very fast the first time through. So to go back and actually read it in detail will be very interesting.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that one next week.
Yeah, me too. That's a good choice. Good choice, my friend. I believe we're also going to, at some point, we don't have a start date for this yet, but we're thinking about doing Akira.
Yeah, well, look, Akira is one we had a lot of trouble working out where we were going to start with this. It's a 6-issue manga series, but of course each issue is about 200 odd pages.
Yeah, that's kind of what's held me off reading it, actually.
Yeah, and look, it is epic. And look, you know, we've started thinking about this again because there's been a lot of talk about the Akira movie happening, and where what direction that's heading in, which is just disasterville, we think.
I just want to correct you there for a second and say that Akira issue one is 351 pages long.
Okay, I'm sorry. So I was off by 150 pages. So they're all quite lengthy as far as issues go. But this is someone's masterwork. This is something that they spent a long time and put a lot of love into. And my good friend Nima, who is the guy who designed the logo on The Real Bits, my website, has suggested again that we do Akira because it is one of his favorite books. And we're going to get him on, I think, when we do that, because he probably has forgotten more about Akira than I'll ever know.
Wow.
And what we thought we'd do is, and we're putting this out there for the audience as well, we might do a really in-depth coverage of Akira. And we're not going to do 7 issues in a row where we do, we look at all 6 volumes and then maybe the movie as well. But what we might do is maybe one a month or however often we think we should do it, take each issue and maybe make this a running thing. So this is a seminal series that's already been made into one movie.
A brilliant animated film.
Brilliant animated movie, which still only took a fraction of that monolith and put it on the screen. And maybe by the time we finish doing that, there'll be some more details coming out about the live-action film as well.
Yeah, so we'll pick a date to start this because it is quite a mammoth task, and we will give everybody plenty of time because it is a big read.
What we need to do before the end of the year, we need to find out if there's any great Christmas comic that we can read.
There's actually a new Batman coming out.
Oh, okay.
It's actually been advertised in the back of a lot of the New 52. What's it called? Batman Noel. Yeah, Batman Noel is coming out. It's a graphic novel. And I think if we can get our hands on this, this has got to be our Christmas book.
Absolutely, then.
Yep. So it's brand new. It'll be new to everybody. And I think this has got to be our Christmas book this year.
Fantastic. Yeah,
and the artwork looks fantastic. There's been like preview pages in some of the New 52. And it looks really good. It looks really twisted, too.
So. I like Twisted. I like Christmas.
Me too. And I like Batman. There's the three things that all go together well.
There's a story I just found it in the newspaper, The Independent, online, and they're doing a bit of a feature on Batman Noel, and they've subtitled it Gotham City's Cape Scrooge.
All right. I think we got our book. When's it come out? Do we know?
It says it's available now.
Well, we're going to have a look around for this and see if we can actually find this. I'm in the city tomorrow. Maybe I should pop into King's Comics.
Okay, yeah.
And see what's going on or something like that. We'll see if we can round up a copy of this thing.
Absolutely. I have to grab a copy for myself, yeah.
All right, not a problem. Sounds good. Well, Richard, I think we've reached the end.
Have we? I think we have.
It is just a little over an hour, so I think we should say, if people want to catch up with you, Richard, where else are they going to find you?
They can find me online, as I've already said once this episode, which is quite conservative for me. You can find me on therealbits.com, that's RELBits.com, or on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic, and you can find more about me by just going to our host of this show, just go to geekactually.com, which is me. And on that front page, you'll find a follow us button, which will show you, point you in the direction of my Twitter, my Facebook, and everything else. You can also write feedback for this show, so if you want to throw in your 2 bits about the books that we review or any news stories, or if you agree or disagree with our opinions, comics@geekactually.com is our email address, or voicemail us at 02-801-13167, and we will play you on the air. You can have your voice heard, so to speak. I don't even think there's a so to speak there. I'm just getting tired now. I'm getting punchy.
I was looking for the entendre in that, Dave, and
No entendre at all. I was trying to create one, but it didn't happen.
Not even a single one.
Not even a half a one.
I'll just take a half entendre. I'm cutting down.
Oh, dearie me. All right, well, I'm going to go and fall into a coma in my bed, I think.
I won't be far behind. I'm a different bed.
not together. No. And we actually said that we're actually separated by many, many, many suburbs. It's okay.
That's true. It's cool. I mean, look, it's bound to happen eventually. So
I'm a married man, man.
Look, if you think that's going to stop me, I don't care. I've got a girlfriend who's patiently waiting in the other room.
Yeah, well, my wife's probably wondering what the hell I'm doing all this time.
So. Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm making half entendres to my co-host across the several suburbs via Skype.
Oh, dearie me. We better bring this to a conclusion before it goes any further, I think. Richard, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Of course it has.
And, well, of course, because you're there, right?
Yeah.
And we'll do it all again next week.
I'll see you all then.
See you, Richard. Bye, everyone.